That is the music of American jazz band leader Zach White leading his band, the Chocolate Beau Brummels, in a song called West End Blues from 1929. White played an important part in Ohio jazz history, according to the authors of a new book on the topic, Ohio Jazz, A History of Jazz in the Buckeye State. Joining us now to talk more about White and the history of jazz in Ohio are two of the authors of the book. David Myers has written a number of books on local history as well as works for the stage. Last year, he appeared on All Sides with Dan Fisher to talk about another book about the history of Lazarus Department Store. Welcome back, David Myers.
Thank you, Ann.
Also with us is one of his co-authors, Candace Watkins, who also helped organize a 1999 exhibit dedicated to the contributions of Ohio's musicians to the development of jazz. She's a community organizer and organizational director of the Arts Foundation of Old Town. Welcome to the show, Candace.
Thank you.
And also joining us, Vaughn Wiester. He's a longtime fixture in the Columbus jazz scene. He has worked with the Dave Workman Blues Band, the Jazz Arts Group, the Woody Herman Orchestra, and others. He was a member of the faculty of the Jazz Studies Program at Capital University. These days, he leads the 21-piece Famous Jazz Orchestra weekly at the Columbus Music Hall and at And Brasileira, an 8-piece group devoted to the popular music of Brazil. Welcome to the show, Vaughn Wiester.
Thanks very much. A little correction. We're appearing now for the last year at the Clintonville Woman's Club.
I'm sorry.
That's perfectly all right.
Okay.
Every Monday night.
Okay, every Monday night from 7:30 to 11 at the Clintonville Woman's Club.
Correctamundo.
Okay. If you have a question or comment there, want to talk about jazz in Ohio, give us a call, 614-292-8513. What's your jazz experience been in Ohio? We want to know about the best places you found to hear great jazz. So, David, let's return briefly to Zach White, who we heard at the beginning. You said in the book that White's band was an important territory band for Ohio. So what do you mean by that, and how did it fit into the overall history of jazz music in Ohio?
Well, basically, you had bands that were territory bands and that weren't territory bands. And the ones that weren't territory bands were those that were based in major cities like New York, Philadelphia, and places like that. The territory bands were the ones that kind of covered the spaces in between. And since Ohio didn't really have any cities that were the equivalent of New York City, Zach was based in Cincinnati originally, and then he later moved to Columbus. But his band would travel around a fairly large area, and that helped to spread the music around. But the real significance of Zach's band was the fact that he had an arranger named Cy Oliver. And at that time, arrangements were kind of a new thing. Before, they would, play kind of head arrangements, and people would just say, okay, you're going to do this, you're going to do this. And Cy found that kind of difficult to follow when they were just passing out parts. So he started writing them down. And he became a very important arranger early in jazz, and soon everybody was hiring arrangers to do their music.
He was also from Zanesville.
Yes.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, the book is chock full, and as you pointed out, you killed a lot of babies in editing the book because
yes.
There was a lot that had to go just for space purposes. But it's absolutely full of information, all leading back to Ohio. However, no matter where the story ends today, it started in New Orleans, as you put it in the book, and I thought it would be helpful to go back to that point and the idea of the amalgamation of sounds that came out of it later. So, Vaughn Wiester, can you tell us a little bit about New Orleans and the inception period?
Well, just as having taught a jazz history course for a few years, other than that, I have very little contact with New Orleans. I've been there twice myself for a day at a time. But New Orleans was the big city, sort of had the magnetism of a big city in the South, and there was so much going on, and there were all these liberated blacks, freed slaves, and there were people who were still in bondage. And there was a scene, I guess, once a week or so at this place called Congo Square. There'd be these huge parties with drum lines and dancing and so forth. And there was a group of Creoles who were more educated blacks who Some actually got European educations and were and had more facility on the instruments. So you had all these cross currents of the more educated, the less educated, the refined players, the not so refined players. So it was just kind of a hotbed of a, you talk about a gumbo. There was a musical gumbo brewing in New Orleans for quite a while there, which resulted in what we call jazz.
Yeah, I think the key thing is, though, that the ingredients already existed and had pretty well been dispersed throughout the country. And Ohioans were responsible for creating a lot of those ingredients. And, I emphasize that Benjamin Hanby and Stephen Foster and Daniel Emmett, that was kind of the beginning of American popular music, the minstrel songs that they were writing. Mm-hmm. And they all were living and writing in Ohio. And that was a key element in jazz. They would take those songs and reinterpret them. And so,
as was ragtime.
Which came along later. So all these things, Ohio, Cincinnati especially, and Cleveland was a hotbed for ragtime composers. There were dozens of them, really important ones. Like in Cincinnati, there was Dr. Artie Matthews, who is one of Terry Waldo's favorite composers. And Columbus, we had Shep Edmonds, who was the first African-American to actually start his own Tin Pan Alley publishing firm. And they were all writing this ragtime music. And, the importance of the territory bands was they helped to spread that around.
It traveled overland because there was no air flight.
Right.
So you traveled overland.
Right.
You went through towns. You left your music. You picked up things that they were improvising along the way. And the blues and all of these different types of music fed into what we now call jazz.
I love the idea of that. I mean, there used to be something like 60,000 jazz bands out there in the country
right.
at one
yes.
point. I read in the book,
mm-hmm.
and a jazz club on every street corner, so to speak. I love the idea of people traveling through town and leaving behind. It just doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah,
well, it's because we can travel in the air
right
now. So you hop an airplane and you go to Pittsburgh. You don't travel through Zanesville and through all these
right.
little towns to get there.
I mean, we trace how it traveled from New Orleans along the river, but it also went overland, by train, and you had circus bands that were spreading elements of jazz and
horse-drawn carriages.
Yeah, the circus bands was an interesting episode as well. I think in the second chapters, you call it the jazz diaspora.
Yes.
know, it's exactly what it was.
Yeah, and reason we wrote the book is Ohio kind of gets short shrift on all this mm-hmm. kind of because we didn't have major cities that were jazz centers, but we did have jazz musicians.
And we have a lot of them.
Yes.
And a lot of big enough cities.
Yes.
To attract the shows and the...
Everybody wanted to play in Ohio. I mean, it was...
A lot of work to go around.
A lot of places to play.
Fantastic recording studios in Ohio and nearby Ohio.
Yeah, so there was a lot going on here, but it wasn't New York City. It wasn't, Kansas City, but it had its own scene. And it was pretty vibrant.
Sure, and a gig in Circleville is a gig.
Yes, spoken like a musician.
Thank you.
A gig is a gig. We're talking about a new book. It's called Ohio Jazz, A History of Jazz in the Buckeye State. It was written by David Myers, Candace Watkins, Arnett Howard, and James Loeffler. With us today, David Myers and Candace Watkins, and also Vaughn Wiester, jazz musician and band leader of the Famous Jazz Orchestra. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 614-292-85. And Charles in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm originally from Springfield. I'm 73 now. And there's a very rich, strong history of Afro-American musicians who played with the big name Afro-American bands like Count Basie and this. So I was wondering, is included in this book, is that history?
Definitely is.
Absolutely.
Springfield was incredibly important. And Springfield, by extension, Wilberforce. We've got
yes.
a whole chapter about Wilberforce.
Good.
But you'll read about, Cecil and Lloyd Scott. You'll read about the beginning of McKinney's Cotton Pickers.
Right.
Booty Woods.
Yeah, well, yeah, and Johnny Lytle. Johnny Lytle. Right, all these, right. All these great musicians came out of Springfield.
Right.
Springfield is really kind of Oprah represented for its size.
Right. It is. It had great musicians.
So. Yes. So, yes, there's a lot in the book about Springfield.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that my hometown was included.
All right, Charles, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Which brings up a good point. What was there a tendency to favor Columbus since, A, you're from here, and, B, it is what it is? Or how did you manage to give things proper weight out there?
We are Columbus-centric. I mean,
we're Central Ohio-centric.
Yes.
Well, Central Ohio, right.
But we wanted to strike a balance. So that was the challenge throughout writing this book, is to ensure that we covered the other areas of the state as well. And, if you look through the index, you can see it's weighted pretty evenly, focusing on Columbus, Cincinnati, and Cleveland, but also bringing in Toledo, Dayton.
Colton.
Yeah, Colton.
Zanesville.
Yeah,
Chillicothe.
If there were musicians coming from there, Zanesville gets mentioned several times, too, because there's some good people in Zanesville.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, we tried to strike a real balance for it. And that's why, we had to leave out as much as we put in.
We left out more than we put in. We could write two more books about this.
And hopefully you will.
Thank you.
Terry in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I was wondering if Vaughn remembers Warren Stevens, who played electric guitar, jazz guitar up at the Sacred Mushroom, ran the Sacred Mushroom.
Well, I'm sorry to say I cannot remember him. The Sacred Mushroom was before my time in Columbus. I arrived in Columbus in 1967, and so that was kind of square one for me. Sacred Mushroom was already history. Warren Stevens is a name I know, but that's as far as I can go with that.
Well, we can save you on that because I knew Warren Stevens. I'm old enough and have been here all my life. I remember the Sacred Mushroom well.
And we have a nice picture of Warren.
Pictured in our book. And I'm looking for his picture right now. He's on page 75, and it's during a gig with Rusty Bryant and Chez Alfred.
Yeah, and he also played with Rusty a lot, but also recorded a real nice album with Lou Donaldson. We mentioned Warren a fair amount in the book as well.
That's great to hear.
All right, Terry, thanks for the call.
Sure, thanks.
Gosh, the Sacred Mushroom sounds like a lot of fun.
It was.
A jazz club?
Kind of a beatnik-y, yes. Poetry, jazz, all of that kind of stuff.
Back in the day, what do you consider the heyday of jazz in Ohio and also Columbus?
Now.
Yeah, Vaughn nods.
Well, viewed a certain way, but yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, now at least we recognize the history and recognize what's going on. And
there, I would say the heyday was probably 50s, 60s, as far maybe late 40s, as far as club activity was concerned. And the place was really hopping at that time. Now, though, we've got these jazz repertory groups like Columbus Jazz Orchestra. We've got groups like Vaughn's group, which is kind of a hard bop group.
We can stuff a whole stage at 1 3-day festival only with jazz.
I think it's local. I think what has occurred is people all at once realized, hey, we're losing the music. And so there was more of an interest in trying to preserve it. And so, that's when, right after World War II, colleges started developing their own programs and things. And jazz studies became something that everybody was kind of rushing towards.
Does it change when we start to study it?
Yes. It becomes less improvisational. It gets written down. And as he was talking about head arrangements, those are arrangements where you just remember what you played and you play it again and
the
again.
The jazz equivalent of a garage band.
Yeah. Right. And then it got started getting written down and it changed enormously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We have one quote in there, and I forget who it was from, but it's a jazz educator who said, you're more likely to be paid to teach jazz than to play jazz.
And on that note, we will return to our conversation after this. We're talking about Ohio Jazz, A History of Jazz in the Buckeye State. It's a new book. Two of the authors are with us, David Myers and Candace Watkins, and also Vaughn Wiester. He's a jazz musician and band leader of the famous Jazz Orchestra. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and time is running out for you to support our station and register to win an iPad. Our fall membership drive begins this Thursday, and by making your pledge before the start of the drive, you'll be automatically entered to win an iPad. No pledge is necessary, but your support continues to pay for the programs you enjoy. Entries are only accepted at our website, so visit WOSU.org right now, make your pledge, and get registered. 46 degrees with sunshine today, warming up to a high near 60. Clear skies tonight, a low of 37. Support for 89.7 comes from Home Instead Senior Care, helping seniors in their homes, hospital, and independent or assisted living facilities, whatever they call home. More at homeinstead.com or 1-800-4-SENIORS. Home Instead, senior care. To us, it's personal. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about the history of jazz in Ohio with David Myers and Candace Watkins, who, with Arnett Howard and James Loeffler, wrote the new book, a new book, Ohio Jazz, A History of Jazz in the Buckeye State. Also with us, jazz scholar, musician, and band leader Vaughn Wiester. If you have a idea for where you like to listen to jazz in Columbus, give us a call, or in Central Ohio, I should say. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org, and you can go to our Facebook page as well. And you can also, of course, pose your comments and questions in any of those ways as well. Let's hear from Michael in Columbus. You're on the air, Michael.
Greetings. This is Michael Gokey. I'm a local jazz trombone.
Hi, Michael.
Hey, how you doing, Candace?
Good.
And Vaughn, how you doing?
Good, Michael.
And first of all, I just wanted to really thank all of you guys for, you know, promoting the music, dedicating your lives and your hearts to promoting this music. And certainly means a great deal to me. And it's interesting, you know, I'm a ethnomusicology PhD candidate at Ohio State, and I'm doing my dissertation on kind of a comparative study of jazz, the culture of jazz education, or the influence that jazz education has had on jazz culture. And so the comments that you just made on that subject were kind of right on point, because there does seem to be kind of a disconnect in many ways from, you know, as Dave Lieben once said, you know, music in the streets, or, you know, kind of the street side of jazz versus the academic kind of side of jazz. And so the comment I was going to make was talking about the different places to play. First thing, you know, I come from Cincinnati, and when I came to Columbus, I was really impressed by kind of the camaraderie of the arts community, just in general.
It is wonderful here.
Yeah. I mean, musicians, if they're not playing, they come to, you know, check your set out. You go to theirs, you know, their events, and everybody really works together really well in that respect. And the place that I was going to talk about was Dick's Den. Of course, that's
quite a history there.
Why not?
Oh yeah. And a couple weeks ago, when the electricity went out, there was no electric over there, and I passed by, and there was all these candles in there, and I was like, wait a minute.
Oh my gosh.
And then I went in there, and you know, Eddie Bayard's up there playing, and you know, and I grabbed my horn, jumped on stage, and started. It was just, I mean, it was just such a great experience, because it was just like, you know, that was it. No electricity, just candles. Everybody was packed in there, and, you know, 2 a.m., and it was like, okay, this is how it would have been without.
In the old days, absolutely. Open till the ice runs out.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for your call.
Oh, thank you so much.
Take care.
All right.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Michael.
I'm so glad he mentioned Dick's Den. I was thinking in advance about that, thinking it's a bit scruffy, but it's one of the most music-friendly environments I've ever been in.
Scruffy?
Slightly.
Yeah. Imagine you've been in some scruffy places.
Once in a while, yeah. It happens. But
let's listen to a cut from Rusty Bryant. Rusty Bryant and the Carolyn Club Band performed the song All Night Long, Night Train, live at the Carolyn Club in Columbus in 1952. Let's listen to a bit of it. ¶¶ Man, that sounds like it was a fun night.
To me, that's what music is about. I mean, that recording captures the entire atmosphere in the club. And what's interesting is it was recorded with one Telefunken microphone hanging in the middle of the ceiling. And that's all they used.
And yet I love the sound. It's not perfect. It wouldn't pass muster technically in a lot of places, but I love that
feel. But it's live.
Feel.
It catches the spirit of the moment and of the people in the club, and there's people still that were in that club that talk about being there.
Rusty's whipping them into a frenzy.
He can do that.
Totally.
Yeah. I mean, he was a complete showman, too, because during that era as well, he had a white bearskin rug.
And we'd lay down and play.
He'd lay down on it and play. He'd blow smoke rings through his saxophone. I mean, he'd do a kip up, from his back onto his feet. So it was a show.
It was called walking the bar, getting out in the crowd.
Tell us about him. He's another Central Ohioan, or?
Yeah, he was absolutely Central Ohio transplant. He was born in West Virginia, but moved here when he's quite young. And he really, the more we worked on this book, the more I understood his importance to music in Ohio. I knew of him as a Central Ohio figure. And I also knew he'd spent a lot of time working in Indianapolis. But when we start looking to Cincinnati, I mean, he hired an awful lot of Cincinnati musicians. He hired an awful lot of Dayton musicians. He was running everybody through his band. He was discovering all this new talent. There's Bill Mason and Wilbur Longmire and all these guys. They got their start with him, and then they moved on, and did their own thing.
Well, he's also pretty famous in England in a movement called acid jazz, which came long after he recorded his recording.
I think I bring up there's different kinds of jazz, right?
Yes.
Well, there's different names for jazz.
Okay.
Yeah. You can argue there's as many different kinds of jazz as there are people playing it.
Which is the beauty of it.
You can argue it.
Yeah. I mean, and it's, I'm going to say they're all equally valid. In my heart, I may not believe that, but I think there's a case to be made for every different type. And that's, I think, when people...
With certain exceptions.
Yeah, yeah.
But
we talk in the final chapter about, people who, bemoan the loss of jazz, and they think that it's gone.
Oh, they keep saying jazz is dead, and we keep saying no.
And we say, we're not going to be the jazz police and being the ones who say this is jazz and this isn't jazz.
Uh-huh.
Because there's jazz being interwoven. It's become such an important kind of a color on the palette of music that everybody is using it.
Well, there's the guy that recorded with rock and roll bands that... And it crossed over, and you can hear the crossover.
Yeah, I mean, the guys that go out and, play with Rod Stewart and play with Phil Collins and stuff, they're jazz players. When I go back home, they record jazz albums.
Well, and there was the British invasion, the so-called British invasion, but what they took back with them.
Oh, they took back a richness of our heritage, yeah.
You're always hearing them look back at American jazz.
American blues and American jazz.
Jazz, right.
That, well, that's,
there's
the
Foley.
That's a good example. But the one thing I really kind of miss is having, come of age during the 60s. The distinctions between types of music didn't really exist at that time. And so it wasn't unusual to see a concert where, you've got a jazz musician, you got Charles Lloyd playing next to some rock band, next to some, country blues band. Everybody would just kind of embrace them all. Now, because of the way, commercial radio is gone, everything has to fit a certain format.
But the musicians still do a lot of crossover. I was beginning to mention Foley, who played with Miles Davis as his bass player and now plays with the Parliament Funkadelic George Clinton as his drummer. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of different ends of the spectrum.
Right. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about Ohio jazz history, inspired by a new book. It's called Ohio Jazz, A History of Jazz in the Buckeye State. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Dick in Fairfield Beach, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Dick's Den Scruffy. That's the highest tone place I go.
Am I going to have to pay for that reading?
You got to pay, Vaughn.
Any rate,
it's been recorded now.
When my dad was learning to play, it was very segregated. There were the people in the city, there was the white side, and then there was the east side. And who Von Weister knows very well, Don Seelbach, he would tell me about that, which didn't make sense to me because having grown up in the 60s, jazz was essentially black music. At any rate, when did that start to change, and how did that change sometime in the 40s, 50s?
Well, the bands, lots of the bands crossed over. I mean, there were always crossover players that were playing in different bands. And the African-American bands were always playing in the big venues downtown in the white clubs.
Yeah. I mean, you go back to 1920, and Mamie Smith had white musicians.
Right. Heard,
and she was a African-American blues swinger, but she had white musicians in her band. So if you look at it, you know, the musicians were always out ahead of where the social,
the
the social curve. And but I would say, you know, it was during the 40s, late 40s, early 50s especially, where they, the musicians really were discovering themselves. It had happened before that. I mean, Benny, saxophone player.
Benny Carter?
Benny Goodman.
You know, even in the movies.
38,
even in the
you know, movies. 1938, yeah. You know, he had Lionel Hampton as band.
Well, in Jeanette recording studios, when you see pictures of the bands recording, they're multicultural
so
bands.
The musicians were trying to break down those barriers. You know, public acceptance probably started coming among the, you know, the more hip people during the middle 50s. And
there
just
are lots
ahead
of accounts of after-hours scenes where the whites and blacks would get together in some after-hours location.
Yeah, now that's a common experience for a lot of the musicians, you know, from the generation ahead of mine.
And that goes back into the 30s and probably the 20s as well.
Yeah.
But Benny Goodman was really a kind of a champion doing what he did. Just step right out on the stage with a mixed band, and here it is. You can like it. You can not like it. This is what I'm doing.
Thank you, Dick, for the call.
Thank you.
Let's turn to Art Tatum.
Good idea.
Jazz pianist from Toledo. The song is titled Nice Work If You Can Get It, and it was recorded in 1949. Tatum. The song is titled Nice Work If You Can Get It, recorded in 1949. His music is considered the gold standard of jazz piano.
Absolutely.
God is in the house.
Yeah. Was it, who said that?
Fats Waller
said, ladies and gentlemen, God has entered the house.
And
when Art Tatum came in, and Fats Waller was a pretty good musician,
right.
You know?
Yep, kind of good.
Yeah, but I think, you know, when he appeared on the scene, he wasn't really emulated by anybody. I mean, he was such a phenomenon that the legend started to be spread that he had learned to play piano by fingering, you know, player piano, the keys, and it was when they'd done two passes through the piano roll, so it was actually four-handed piano. But he denied that was how he learned, but it was just, it sounded like, you know, two people playing.
He put more notes in a tune than people thought were possible.
He didn't learn by sight because he was actually nearly blind all of his life. So he learned by ear.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Columbus has a tentative claim on him in that he did come here to go to the Ohio School for the Blind.
He studied at which is now our Columbus Division of Health, where we do the Hot Times Community Arts and Music Festival.
Yes. Am I correct in my understanding that his aspiration was to be a concert pianist?
I think you're right about that.
I believe that was the case.
Yes.
And soon realized that that was probably, a career was not in the offing.
Right.
Well, there was a little place called Val's in the Alley up in Cleveland that kind of lays claim to his jam sessions and stories of magnificent players coming in and the fact that he could make them weak in their knees just listening to him. They'd go back and question their own talent.
I lived in Toledo for a couple years before I moved to Columbus, and they lay claim to him as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Oh, definitely. Because
he was
born there, yes. But, you know, he had enough talent to go around. The nice thing about Art is that it seems like every time he sat down at the piano, somebody turned on a recorder. And so,
well, that's true.
There are hundreds of albums of Art Tatum playing. And every
we
time,
also,
He sat down, you know, in somebody's apartment. There was a tape recorder going.
We also have a gorgeous picture of him in the book that was taken by Herman Leonard. And Herman Leonard is a fabulous photographer, was a fashion photographer, and his passion was jazz. And so they were generous enough to give us a couple of photographs. And this one is of Art with his hands folded and his eyes closed. And it's one of the more flattering and beautiful portraits of him. So,
Mike in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, I had a question about Harry Sweet Edison.
Ah.
That name comes from, he's from Columbus. I don't know if he was just born here and moved out to the West Coast later in his life or if he had any, maintained any ties, but he was just awesome as a trumpeter for Billie Holiday and Nat King Cole and the big band leaders, Count Basie in the 40s and such. Anybody have any information about Sweet?
He kept his ties here, David.
Yes.
You want to talk?
Yeah, he grew up here, basically. He went down to, I believe, Kentucky for a while and lived with a relative, but came back to Columbus, and at the end of his life, he had returned to Columbus. In fact,
he's buried here.
Yeah, I started an organization in 1995 called Columbus Senior Musicians Hall of Fame, and we inducted Sweets, and it was only 2 months before he died, and so we had him on the stage, and it was a great experience meeting him. But, yeah, I mean, he started out here and started out with Earl Hood's band, went up to Cleveland, played there, became most famous probably as Frank Sinatra's trumpet player of choice. And there are a number of stories of Sweets traveling with Sinatra, and Sinatra insisted that he be treated well. And you know, Sinatra had quite a bit of clout. So when they go into clubs and say, you know, you're going to treat him as an equal, they treated Sweets as an equal, and same with the hotels they stayed in.
Sweets never forgot that and told that story right to his old age. So.
Mike,
are there any other interviews with Sweets other than the Ken Burns famous jazz interviews that he did as part of his series?
Oh yeah, there's tons of interviews. In fact, in the Jazz Oral History Archives in the Smithsonian, there's a really nice taped interview with Sweets, and they will let you tap into that if you get a hold of them.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
All right, Mike. Thanks for the call.
There's got to be something in your old downbeat collection here and there, too.
Yeah.
We are talking about Ohio jazz history. There's a new book. It's called Ohio Jazz, A History of Jazz in the Buckeye State. We're talking with David Myers, co-author of the book with Candy Watkins, and also Vaughn Wiester, jazz musician, band leader of the famous jazz orchestra. So if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, and we take Facebook as well. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
The Bible tells us God created man in his own image and started with Adam. Modern scientists, even many Christian ones, say
that would be against all the genomics evidence that we've assembled over the last 20 years.
I'm Neil Conan, science and the religious divide over Adam and Eve. Plus one cellist's nightmare, flying coach. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 to 4 on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us today for All Sides with Ann Fisher. 46 degrees with sunshine and a high near 60 this afternoon. Clear skies tonight, a low of 37. More sunshine and a high of 63 on Tuesday. Support for 89.7 comes from Ohio State's Melton Center for Jewish Studies, presenting Jewish Voting Patterns and the 2012 Elections on Sunday, October 14th at 7 p.m. in Ohio State's Fawcett Center, featuring Jewish demography scholars and political scientists. Details at go.osu.edu/Jewish events. And support for 89.7 comes from Ohio State's John Glenn School of Public Affairs, offering continuing education and graduate degree programs designed for the working professional. More details about the programs and upcoming information sessions are online at glenn.osu.edu. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
¶¶ We are talking about the history of jazz in Ohio with the authors of a new book on the topic, local historian David Myers and Candace Watkins, who with Arnett Howard and James Loeffler wrote the new book, Ohio Jazz, A History of Jazz in the Buckeye State. Also with us, jazz scholar, musician, and bandleader Vaughn Wiester. We're going to move into the 1960s with this cut of Rahsaan Roland Kirk playing We Free Kings. Okay, Rahsaan Roland Kirk is a Columbus native, one of the greatest jazz figures of all time, also lost his sight at an early age, switched instruments to preserve his eyes apparently, but he was not to be kept down. He wanted to learn to play three instruments at once. He read in the book like a force of nature. What an amazing person.
He didn't know the word, I can't do this. I mean, he didn't know those words. So when it came to playing more than one instrument, he didn't know people didn't do that because he couldn't see it necessarily. So he could.
And he was actually playing more than one instrument in that
Absolutely.
Just now.
Yeah. He played three instruments at a time, and he was playing different things on each of the instruments. There's been other, you know, kind of carnival acts that would play, you know, seven clarinets, but they were playing essentially the same thing, but he was playing different melodies and things on each one. And this, I chose that cut because it highlights his flute playing, which isn't as recognized, but he was an excellent flute player as well. And you didn't hear it in the cut because it was cut
super
off,
fancy
but he
there,
had
but
a very percussive style with the flute that most people, you know, don't
he
play
also
that
perfected
way.
Circular breathing.
Yeah.
Talk about that for a minute.
Well, he just had the ability that he could hold these notes forever.
You breathe and in through your nose and out through your mouth at the same time.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, it's really hard, and you're blowing a horn.
Yeah, and Kenny G several
yeah,
years
I'm thinking
ago.
About it right now.
Yeah. Kenny G, the sax player, made a big deal, you know, several years ago about beating Rahsaan Roland Kirk's, you know, ability
holding
to hold
the
a note.
Note.
But the difference was, Rahsaan was playing music at the time. He wasn't just holding a note.
No, just holding a note. Yes.
Well, and he wasn't trying to beat anybody.
No,
he was just being himself.
He was always trying to capture the sounds that were in his head. And as a result, you see him playing, and he's just got all these instruments hanging off of him. And he's got bells and sirens and whistles.
Well, I read that some thought he was sort of a sideshow. It was
yes.
like an antic type of contrivance. And he was aware of that and would make sure people knew.
Yeah, he'd
I'm
say
not
that.
A
I'm not a sideshow. Yes.
This is the real deal.
It was,
well,
it was always real music coming out.
Right.
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 And he said, and because everything was an audio for him, his whole life track was in audio, even the sound of streetcars was music, and the sound of children laughing and playing was music.
Yeah,
and so he worked.
I remember
that
him playing
in.
At the Agora and whipping out a laughing box.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
right.
Everything was fair game as far as he was concerned in recreating the sound that he visualized. And
little bit of the John Cage influence.
Yeah.
Incidentally, on the subject of circular breathing, anybody in Central Ohio that wants to check out some seriously good circular breathing, just check out Byron Stripling. He's got it down.
Mm. Good.
Where am I? Okay. Jerry in Dublin, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Jerry.
Thanks. This is a great show, and I tuned in late, so I'm not sure who all your guests are. But I was engaged. A wonderful man and I were together almost 3 years. He died recently. But when we first got together, he liked jazz, and that made me a little nervous because I wasn't too sure. He was 80, I was 75, didn't quite know what jazz meant, and I thought he might be into the Miles Davis, which I wasn't, but he was in the big band jazz, and we would go listen to Vaughn Wiester in the evening, on Monday evening, down at the Manor Corps. I'm telling you, it just blew me away. It was wonderful.
How
but we
sweet.
Also were at a steakhouse in town, and we were kind of just listening to the music, and I said, on the side, and he did a double take, and he looked at me, and he said, you couldn't possibly know that song. What was the frim fram sauce? And the last line is on the side. He decided I was an okay kind of person if I knew that. And then we went to New York and went to Dizzy Gillespie's and heard a wonderful band. I can't remember their name, but I remember the bass player was Happy Williams. And he just blew everybody out of that place. It was absolutely phenomenal. And I don't know if your guests know Happy Williams, but he is one of the greatest bass players I ever heard. He makes it sing.
Well, dear, I'm Vaughn Weister, and you're okay with me.
You didn't know that Vaughn Weister was on the program. Oh.
No, I enjoy watching you as much as listening to the band, because you bend your knees and point that finger, and I just crack me up. I love it.
Okay, well, there you go, Jerry.
I'm sticking with you.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Jerry.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Keep going. I love it. Bye.
Okay, gosh, I thought you were the one name she did catch, and that's why she brought you up. So
yeah, well,
there
Vaughn
you go.
Is a show. If you go to see him play, to conduct his orchestra.
Rashida, and you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Yeah, I was just going to make a comment about a person that I knew from way back, and that was Rahsaan Roland Kirk.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
And when I was a child, we used to go to a camp called Camp James Wheeler, and I was assigned to take care of him and, you know, take him throughout the campgrounds because of his blindness. And so I was probably at the time about 12 years old, and at night he would always play for us his saxophone. And then he probably was maybe about in his early 20s or something of that nature. And so as a result, I was I was able to pretty much follow him throughout his entire career. I remember seeing him for the first time in Camp Wheeler blowing two saxophones.
Okay.
What a wonderful memory. How fortunate.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, and thanks for sharing.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Take care.
I'll tell you who else remembers Roland Kirk is Sonny McBroom.
Yes.
Sonny remembers Roland Kirk very well.
Well, Ronnie's family's still here.
Okay.
I just saw his sisters just the other day.
Email from Doug in West Manchester. He says, I used to enjoy Mama Jazz, a.k.a. Phyllis Campbell of Eaton, Ohio,
absolutely,
who gave us great jazz music nightly over the Miami University Public Radio Station.
Wow. I was on her show with Andy Klein once, and we did some history of Ohio in music, and I think we did 2 hours with her. It was great. She was just wonderful fun.
And another email from Daniel. He writes, I had no idea Ohio had such a rich jazz history. I'm a big fan of Mark Pflug.
Pflugi.
Uh-huh. And Derek DiCenzo, but my favorite local musician has to be Tony Monaco, Tuesdays at the Rumba Cafe. I think we're very lucky to have so many great musicians in Columbus. In fact, I was at a small jazz club in Tokyo a few years ago and was talking to another patron. He asked me where I was from, and when I said Ohio, to my surprise, he asked me if I knew Tony Monaco.
Yeah. Well, Ohio's pretty famous these days.
That's why we wrote the book, is to point this out. That
is to point out that we have all these wonderful
people. And, you know, just for the sake of folks who might just be tuning in, and one of our recent callers with me in the studio, David Myers, co-author of Ohio Jazz, A History of Jazz in the Buckeye State, and his co-author, Sandy Watkins, and also Vaughn Weister, jazz musician and band leader of the famous Jazz Orchestra. We still have a few minutes. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Mike in Buckeye Lake, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, my father used to play out of Pittsburgh and did the circuit from Lake Erie down through Columbus. He mentioned Club Glory. I was wondering if your experts there have any information
in
about
Columbus?
Club Glory. Yes.
The Gloria used to sit out on Dublin Road where there's a Mexican restaurant. Yeah. Sitting there now.
Yeah, the one you remember is the second one. There
is
was
it?
One before that, which went way back, which was even in the big band era. So there was a Club Gloria, and it...
Where was it?
The same place.
Same place.
Yeah. But it went through all different kinds of music. I mean, during the 60s, they even had folk music in there for a while. In fact, that's where Chuck White's group used
right.
to play.
Right.
Let's listen to some more music.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Harold. okay. Nancy Wilson, the best-known jazz singer from our great state of Ohio, I guess, singing When Sunny Gets Blue in 1962, a popular jazz song with words and music by Jack Siegel and Marvin Fisher from 1946.
When Sunny gets blue, she breathes a sigh of sadness, like the wind that stirs the trees, wind that sets the leaves to swaying, like some violins are playing weird and haunting melodies.
That's Nancy Wilson singing When Sunny Gets Blue in 1962. Nancy was Central Ohio through and through, born in Chillicothe, raised in Columbus. She hosted her own television show as a teenager. I was amazed at that.
Well, she was playing with the bands with Hank Marr and Old Boss, I believe, maybe where she started. Well,
lying about her age.
Raleigh Randolph, she was out with him. Right.
We have lots of calls we're trying to get to. Let's see. Let's go to now Harold in Clintonville. Welcome to the show, Harold.
Good morning. I am enjoying the show, and I wanted to mention, I heard the name Dix Din mentioned in there about jazz, and I do go to Dix. I didn't think the discussion would be complete without the addition of another bar that used to be on High Street at 2040 North I, and that's Larry's.
Sure, absolutely.
I worked at Larry's for 6 years, and in fact, I used to book Vaughn's, his band in Larry's then. Very small room, but we really, really enjoyed it.
That was actually a band led by Keith Henson.
Yes.
Who now resides out in Washington State. That was the Keith Henson Octet, and we had a good long run there at Larry's. It was a fabulous time, and it was a great period for me because I kind of, if I'm a jazz improviser now, it's really thanks to that band because that was the first kind of workshop situation I ever found myself in where I could consistently ply the trade.
Yeah, there's several real nice recordings available by that group, too.
Harold, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Ann in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. I just wanted to make a comment about Roseanne Roland Kirk. I actually saw him, it had to be like 1972, 73, around there, at one of the early ConFests.
Absolutely.
Down on campus, and he was just incredible.
Yes, that was not long before he passed away, and that was a pretty interesting concert in that small little area. I'm glad you were there.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Yeah,
go ahead.
So one of the most amazing things about him is he had a stroke late in his life.
And still played.
And rehabilitated himself so he could learn to play with one hand.
More than one instrument.
Yes.
Unreal.
Unreal. Anne, thanks for the call.
All right, thank you.
John, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, John from Columbus.
Hi. I just wanted to give a quick shout-out to not only Vaughn, but to others who are keeping jazz alive for the future. I think Vaughn participated in the Dominion Middle School Jazz Fest this last year.
I did indeed.
That was hosted by the fantastic Bruce Carlson, who is a band teacher there. And I just wanted to say, I think the future for jazz in Columbus is great. The kids are so inspired. So many kids in Columbus City Schools love jazz. I know my son is one of those. And so big thanks, shout out to Bruce and other educators and to Vaughn and everyone else who participates in things like that. So,
okay. Well, thank you very much. And on behalf of Bruce, thank you. And I hope he's listening and sitting there to catch the wreath you're throwing his way. That's very nice because he's really doing a very important thing. We must do everything we can to pass the torch to the young people because what's in the air is quite a different thing. So we really have to say, here's what this is and do what we can to bring the experience to young people. And Bruce Carlson is one of those people who is stepping up to the plate to do that.
And I'd say it's really sticking. I was in Thailand this summer with my son, who is 13 years old, and we had a chance to go to a jazz club there. And the one thing he said is, man, I wish I'd brought my saxophone. So, I see a bright future, and I thank the educators at Columbus City Schools, especially Bruce, for that. So,
well, bless you, bless you for saying so.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, John. Thanks for your call. In the introduction of the book, you referred to an ongoing argument about jazz history, whether to focus only on the artists who had developed a national reputation and also or also include those who stayed close to home and devoted themselves to the local scene.
We wouldn't have the jazz scene in America we have now if there weren't people that stayed at home and taught and stayed close to their scene and welcomed the traveling bands through and provided support, and also many are fabulous players and side people in recording, and
not to mention mentors.
Yes,
absolutely.
I mean, you know, Rusty and Hank Marr. I mean, those are guys who went out and established themselves,
but also taught and also had programs here. Rusty was part of Originating Music in the Air and the Rusty Bryant Outreach Program in the prisons.
Yeah, well, they came home. And
came home.
Yes.
Yeah, the Ohio Penitentiary 5/11 Jazz Ensemble.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I had to mention that since I worked at the Ohio Penitentiary.
Deb in Nashville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm enjoying this so much. I'm just visiting. I grew up here but don't live here now. I live in Nashville, Tennessee. But I just wanted Vaughn to talk a little bit about Dave Wheeler's influence on the jazz scene in Columbus.
Well, that's a great one. Thanks for the opportunity, and thanks for mentioning Dave. Dave was a very accomplished piano player and woodwind player, notably tenor sax and clarinet. A total character, a musical genius. He was an arranger and composer, and he was best known as a mentor to a whole generation of Central Ohio musicians. I grew up in Mount Vernon, and I knew about Dave Wheeler, but I didn't have a car or the means to get there, or I would have been studying with Dave Wheeler as I grew up in the early 60s in high school. But all the guys my age, or an awful lot of the guys my age from that period, did study with Dave either privately or in one of his workshop settings. Dave was quite a character and quite a great musician and made a great contribution to the state of music in Central Ohio today.
Well, thanks for your call.
Thank you so much. And, what about Roger Hine?
Roger's still around, still playing, and going to be performing, I believe, at the Hot Times Festival with Michael Vanderdoes coming
up
in September.
Roger can't be beat. Roger can't be beat. He's one of the greats.
All righty. Well, thanks for that call, and thanks for listening. Once again, I want to remind folks that Von Weister's Famous Jazz Orchestra will appear Monday nights. Every Monday at the Clintonville Women's Club, so check that out. We'll have a link on our website if you want at wosu.org/allsides. I want to thank my guests today, co-authors with Arnett Howard and James Loeffler. We have David Myers. David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ann.
And also Candy Watkins. Candy, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
They helped write the book Ohio Jazz, A History of Jazz in the Buckeye State. Also with us, Vaughn Weister, jazz musician and band leader of the Famous Jazz Orchestra.
Thanks for having me, Ann. What a treat.
It was a lot of fun. Thanks a lot. And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.